thank you so much for having me and for the beautiful introduction. Again, it's hard to keep introducing the same person. You're doing it tomorrow too? Yeah. Poor thing. So, how many of you are in this beautiful facility for the first time? So, are you new to Sims altogether? That's great. So, welcome, and I hope if you have any questions or there are things you want to, I think there's a bunch of literature over on that table, but also talking to Tawari or, you know, anybody that you know is from the organization would be a really fabulous thing, because what a resource. You know, it's quite incredible. How many of you were not here last night? Oh, excellent. Then I'll tell the same story again. as I said last night, on some book tour or another, I was in Seattle in the snow. And it's when I learned that snow in Seattle is an emergency. the publisher had put me up in some hotel, and there was a driver taking me to different things, and she called me can you walk 4 yards to meet the car? And I was like, I live in Massachusetts, I'm used to but anyway, that reading was at the university bookstore, and most people who were there, by far the greatest number of people who were there, were from the Sims community. And there was one woman there who raised her hand and said, I can't find a community to sit with in this town. And I thought, wow, isn't that incredible? Even in this age of information overload, you can be here, one of the most vibrant, alive, together communities to find other people, to share your values or wanting to explore the same things, and you might not even know it. So. I think it's just a great opportunity to be here and check out the kind of wider offerings that might be available. So, really welcome. We're gonna, I think, have fun today and tomorrow in a very unusual way. And what an unusual way to spend a weekend or even a day. To not be so plugged in, for one thing, to be exploring, to be experimenting with our own minds and emotions and experience altogether, and really fundamentally kind of stretching in certain ways. So we're going to do lots of different kinds of practices together. I'm certainly going to talk about these four qualities. We'll do some mindfulness practice together to begin with, move over into a more formal kind of loving kindness meditation practice. We'll do sitting, we'll do walking, all kinds of things, and there'll be lots of time for dialogue and just discussion about it all. Because as I said last night, these qualities of the heart, things like loving kindness or compassion, which I'll go into in a second, they're really much more subtle than we might ordinarily think, and in a way, they're more provocative. They're more challenging often than what we take them to be. I was just talking to somebody about Dan Harris, who's a friend of mine. He's an ABC News anchor, and he has this great, really fun book that came out called 10% Happier, which is sort of his coming out as a meditator. And he's very cynical, he's very sarcastic, it's just his nature, or his demeanor anyway. I don't know if it's his nature so much as his demeanor. And he's the friend who told me, my first book was called Loving Kindness, and he's the friend who told me that he used to read it sitting on the New York City subway, and he was so embarrassed to be seen reading a book called Loving Kindness that he used to hide the cover. And I thought, oh God, it's like pornography or something like that, So he came into meditation seeking help. He had a panic attack on air, and he got the Nielsen ratings, and 30 million people saw his panic attack. And he ended up doing meditation. And still, of all the varieties of methods and styles and techniques that were available, the one he was most cynical about was loving kindness meditation. And to his absolute dismay, he had his big breakthrough experience doing loving kindness meditation. So we have a very fun relationship going back and forth. So there are techniques that are explicitly designed to help deepen those qualities known as the four Brahmaviharas. They're developed anyway as we do mindfulness practice, which is how we'll begin. There are lots of ways these qualities deepen and change, and we're just going to experiment with different avenues to get in touch with those qualities, to see about nurturing them. I'm always happy in a time, a gathering of this length, if people leave with some greater confidence and clarity, so that if they choose to go on and pursue, say, loving kindness as a meditation, they have that as a resource, that sense of, oh yeah, I didn't have that precise experience over the weekend, but I can sense, you know, this is what a good approach would be in going forward. It's not likely you're going to love yourself completely by Sunday at, I don't even know what time we end, whatever time we end, even if we went till midnight. Or that you will have no more negative feeling about anybody. It's kind of not the point. But really to understand, also as I started saying last night, there's so many things that we tend to believe because we're taught them. You know, vengefulness is strong, compassion is weak. And just through greater clear seeing, we understand that may not at all be true and that we need to have some sense of choice. Choice doesn't mean you switch off your emotion, but that you understand that by maybe nurturing and feeding that sense of vengefulness, there are going to be certain kinds of consequences and there are options that don't leave us weak and debilitated and ineffectual or passive, but actually leave us very, very strong in a different way. So it all comes back to these four qualities known as the four Brahmaviharas. Brahma means in language, in Pali or Sanskrit, actually in this case, but Pali is the language of the original Buddhist text. It's sort of a kind of a colloquial Sanskrit. Brahma means celestial or supreme or divine. And the translation I do like most that I've heard is the word best. Vihara means dwelling or abiding or home. So taken together, these qualities are said to form our best home. And we're going to explore each of them in our time together. The first is loving kindness, which is the common translation for this word, also in Pali, metta, M-E-T-T-A. Usually we say loving kindness, sometimes we say love. The literal meaning is friendship. I usually describe it as a profound sense of connection because it doesn't mean you like somebody, it doesn't mean you approve of them, it certainly doesn't mean you're going to take them home or give them all your money, but there is some deep knowing that our lives have something to do with one another, that we don't exist in a kind of split-off world as we normally construct with a great big sense of other, right? So it's in some ways the state of loving kindness, despite the fears of somebody like Dan, it's empowered because that sense of connection is actually true. It's not like a sentimental overlay we're trying to push on a very different sort of reality. It is reality. Our lives do have something to do with one another. Our lives are intertwined. We live in an interconnected universe. And so that kind of deeply felt sense of that is what loving kindness is. It may not be highly emotional. We tend to, especially if you're using the word love, of course, we think of it as an emotion. And I, as I said last night, I'm almost done writing a book on love. I think my editor is thwarting me, this line from this movie, Dan in Real Life. Have any of you seen the movie? It's not new. It's quite an old movie at this point. My goddaughter's in it, and I can date the movie by, she was like a little girl in the movie. Now she's 18. And she didn't have any lines. She barked at one point because it was a talent show, and she was a dog. Anyway, but there's this great, great line in the movie which says something like, love is not a feeling, it's an ability. And that's very much, I think, the sense of loving kindness. And the reason the editor doesn't like it is because she said love is a feeling. And of course it is a feeling in our common understanding. But more profoundly, it's an ability. Because that ability, that capacity we have to connect may manifest in a way that's not really emotional. And that doesn't mean it's not happening. Of course, sometimes it is emotional, and that's fine. But I think we tend to limit ourselves because we're looking for just a certain little bandwidth of what we think it's supposed to feel like, and it may be very different than that and very important in terms of our lives to make that connection with someone, and it may be very different. It may be quite outside that or underneath that little bandwidth that we are identifying as the right thing to feel. So that's a theme that keeps coming up again and again. It's not about feeling a certain thing. It's about paying attention in a different way so that we're including rather than excluding. We're experimenting with what it's like to pay attention differently. Loving kindness is that profound sense of connection. And we'll, of course, we'll keep going through these qualities one by one throughout the day. Second quality is compassion, which is the trembling or the quivering of the heart in response to seeing pain or suffering. It's a movement of the heart, and it's a movement toward to see if we can be of help, right? So there's a kind of almost like quickening in our being, but it is contrasted to a movement into the suffering so that we ourselves burn up, right? It's a movement toward. And it's not just like feeling bad. It's a movement toward to see if we can be of help. So there's the implication of some kind of energy there. And also a balance there. It's not insisting that we be the one to help. It's not certain we're not going to make it all better, right? It's a movement toward to see if we can be of help. So that's a very intricate state with lots of layers and lots to discover. The third quality, the third of the Brahmaviharas, is sympathetic joy. It's joy in the happiness of others instead of being lost in jealousy or envy. When we see someone's success or good fortune, we actually feel happy for them. And in some ways, compassion helps us look at suffering in a different way. And sympathetic joy helps us look at joy in a different way. Because for one thing, it's awfully hard to feel joy for someone else's happiness when we ourselves feel we have nothing going, right? So if we don't have a sense of appreciation for anything much in our lives, we don't have a sense of gratitude, it's virtually impossible to feel happy for someone else. So we have to start often by looking at what we do have going in our lives, and that becomes the springboard for being able to be happier for others. And then the last quality, which is really threaded throughout all of them, is the quality of equanimity. So equanimity in this context of the four Brahmaviharas, well, in all contexts, equanimity means balance. In this case, in this context, it means the balance that's born of wisdom, right? So it means that in our loving act, in our compassionate act, we also have a solid dose of wisdom that is going along with that, that's threaded throughout that, whether it's spoken about or not. Because otherwise, those qualities of loving kindness and compassion and sympathetic joy become distortions of themselves. They become something else. We would say these days, I think the languaging we would use as an example would be something like compassion becomes more like burnout. The common word is compassion fatigue. I'll describe some of the problems with that from the Buddhist point of view, but that's what it means, basically. You know, as we understand that word is so much more common, that phrase is so much more common, it's like compassion becomes compassion fatigue or becomes burnout without some equanimity, without some wisdom there that might give us the perspective, for example, I will do everything I can to try to help your situation, and I'm not in control of the universe. I can't make things so. Thus far as I know, no one has invented the chip we can implant in someone else's brain and just like use the remote control and like change, would you? Right? So barring that, we're there, we do everything we can, and wisdom tells us, I'm not in control. It's not in my hands. I was teaching somewhere, and I said, you know, I think it would be a lot better a universe if I was in control. And somebody said, are you sure? Sounds like New York. I was probably in New York. So I'm pretty sure, actually. Yeah, but it's not that way. So that's not meant to lead to apathy or bitterness, but wisdom. I'll do everything, and there needs to be a kind of letting go of control, because that's reality. So these four qualities, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, really support one another. They help one another, and that's the terrain of our exploration. So we will start with some mindfulness practice, which is kind of like the foundation of it all. And you can see, I think, how these qualities are also threaded throughout that particular technique. So I'm going to describe the meditation. We're going to take a short break so you can stretch and go to the bathroom, whatever. Come back and we'll begin with a sitting. How many of you are new to meditation practice, by the way? Is anybody new? Okay, great. So a very common kind of foundational practice. And when I say foundational, I don't mean like we do it, get good at it, never to be seen again. You know, it's something we keep coming back to over and over again, but it does form a great foundation. Often that's done through trying to stabilize our attention somewhat through the deepening of concentration. Concentration can be a kind of fearsome word, depending on how we understand it. I was teaching a retreat just like this, non-residential weekend somewhere. And by Saturday, just before lunch, somebody came up to me and said, how much money would it take for me to offer you, for you to promise not to use the word concentration again for the rest of the weekend? So I said, let's talk. And, you know, concentration is the classic word. It's the standard word for gathering our attention and settling on an object, which over time produces a few different things. One is power, because that's an awful lot of energy in our lives that might be available to us, but tends not to be available to us because we're flinging it into the past, into the future, all over the place. Right? So as we gather our attention, as we gather that energy back, it returns to us and becomes available to us, so we're very empowered by that. There's also a kind of, you could say healing, there's like an integrating function. You know, we're gathering, we're coming back, we're returning to ourselves over and over again. And over time, there's a much stronger sense of centeredness, cohesiveness, presence that happens from that. And, you know, the ordinary translation for that process is concentration. But clearly for him, this guy, concentration had other associations. You know, I would imagine something really harsh, like grabbing onto an object, you know, resenting and trying to resist anything else that came up, getting really uptight. So when he said that to me, I said, would it work for you if every time I use the word concentration, you mentally translated that to stabilizing or settling or centering? And he said, yeah, that would work. And I said, well, you just saved yourself a lot of money, you know. So we choose an object of awareness. We rest our attention on that object. Now, to where he mentioned my book, Real Happiness, which has a lot of meditation instruction in it. And the first time it came back from the editor, from that editor, she said, you're using the word rest a lot. Are you very tired? And I said, probably, but that's also the word, right? Sometimes we think if we have that object of attention, whether it's the breath or could be anything, if we grab onto it really tight, our minds won't wander and they'll actually wander more. So we have an object of awareness, we rest. And the art of concentration is most profoundly understood as continually returning to that object, because your mind's going to wander. That's a guarantee, right? So the range of objects is considerable. It could be the breath, which is how we're going to start. It could be loving kindness, which is another way of concentrating. And that means phrases or a sense of the recipient of the loving kindness. Could be a mantra, could be a sound, could be an image, could be visualization, could be something happening in your body. There are so many possibilities for that central object that we keep returning to. Even if somebody's main practice is not using the breath for that, usually at least some even small amount of time is using the breath. Because as my early teachers would say, first you don't have to believe anything in order to feel your breath. You don't have to call yourself a Buddhist or a Hindu or reject anything else. If you're breathing, you can be meditating. And as one teacher said, I've always felt very charmingly, he said, the breath is very portable, right? So it's not that the others aren't, like loving kindness is as well, but if you're at work and it's crazy and there's all this pressure and all this anxiety in the room, often the easiest tool to reach for is your breath. You're breathing anyway, right? And so you just rest your attention on the breath, and it sort of reshuffles the whole experience that you're having. The principles that we use with the breath are really very similar to loving kindness practice, just with a lot of add-ons, you know, from the loving kindness itself. But concentration is really key in doing loving kindness as well, because that's what empowers it. As a technique. So we choose an object of awareness, we rest our attention on that object. The very first meditation practice I ever learned in India was resting attention on the feeling of the breath, the actual sensations of the in and out breath, and that's what we're going to do. And I was, you know, as many of you have heard me say, I was pretty contemptuous of it. First of all, I thought, what do you mean, feel my breath? I came all the way to India, you know? Where's the magical, esoteric, fantastic technique that's going to clear away all my suffering and make me totally happy? And then I thought, how hard can this be? Wasn't that easy? I had thought, okay, what'll it be, like 800 breaths or 900 breaths? before my mind starts to wander, and to my complete astonishment, it was like 2 breaths. And I was gone, and I was way gone. And it took an extremely long time for me to trust the instruction that I was actually hearing, the guidance I was getting, which was, that's not a problem, that's very natural, you don't have to feel like a failure, don't add, you know, half an hour to the distraction by just judging yourself. It's like, you were gone, start over, right? If you add half an hour, then you were gone for a whole lot longer. So there's a big part of the practice in concentration, in the art of concentration, of letting go and starting over. Letting go and coming back. Letting go and coming back. That's actually what we're training in, and that's a big transformation right there. Because your attention will wander, or you'll fall asleep, or your mind will jump to the past, jump to the future somewhere. You kind of wake up to that. You go, oh, the breath. That moment is really an important moment. That's not remedial work. That is the work. Letting go gently, coming back. These days we'd say with compassion for yourself. You know, the phrase self-compassion is so much more trendy. You never used to hear it, but it's a great body of work, you know, within current Western psychology. It turns out, as research is beginning to show as well, that's the development of self-compassion, some kindness toward yourself, the ability to start over without spending a year and a half blaming yourself, it's so obvious, common sense-wise, you know. But it's not that easy to believe. That's a better way to get something done, to get better at something, to make progress, to succeed, than all the rancor and harshness and judgment and seeking to punish yourself and so on. Those are just not that effective as tools. As people have described to me, scientists have described to me, they say, one scientist said, performance tests of all kinds have shown that really kind of uptight, stressful, judgmental environment will spike your performance briefly, and then you crash. That the way to have a sustained effort over time to succeed, to get something done, is a very different kind of environment. And we would call that self-compassion. So a lot of people think of that as laziness and losing sight of rigor or excellence, but if you actually look at your experience, it's not so much that way. We could say an intention, which is to rest our attention for now on the feeling of the breath. Your mind's gonna go haywire. If you can pretty gently let go and come back, that's really the training. And you can't always, of course, you know, we get all tangled up in old habits, but then you remember that too, and you say, okay, let's just start over. That's why meditation is sometimes known as a resilience skill, right? Because that is actually a life skill. It's not about just something you do sitting in a certain posture. Oh, I can let go of a thought and start over. That's really about everything in life. Every endeavor, every encounter, every moment, really, we're kind of called upon to start over and be present and come back and so on. So it's really going to be a very strong theme also, because that skill runs right through loving kindness practice as well. Okay, so why don't we take a break, and then there's nothing to buy here. I was smiling because I teach in London every now and then, and the London Insight group rents a school because it's the weekend, you know, and some brilliant person brought in like an espresso truck to the schoolyard. So, but I forgot to tell people that they didn't have to be silent when they were buying their espresso at first. Then I soon saw the error of my ways because the poor woman was like so beside herself with frustration as people were pointing and gesturing and, you know, mumbling and things like that. So, but here, there's nothing to buy. So there's no reason, you know, unless obviously if you want to talk to managers or, you know, you have an issue, please don't try to be silent. But other than that, you can just enjoy the break. And if we can come back,